Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hello, hello. Welcome to session 83 of Selling the Couch. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me for today's session. Man, I can't believe we're at 82 sessions. It's so crazy. When I first recorded these initial sessions, I don't know what I imagined, but I don't think I ever envisioned having 83 sessions. I learned a lot about private practice, learned a lot about podcasting, and I am just so honored and so humbled that you guys would continue to share the podcast, to take the time to listen. Today, I thought I would have a private practitioner on talking about their private practice journey. My guest is Sovan Penn. And Sovan, one of the things that we really talk about in today's session is this other side of private practice. Sovan, for his first year in private practice, he literally had one client. And from then it's slowly built, but we are talking all about some of those fears that he had in jumping into private practice, what it was like for him to just have that one client, and what kept him going on his private practice journey. We wrap up with the hot couch round, where Sovan shares some of the wisdom that he has learned over the past decade and some of the resources that have helped him as a private practitioner. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. So here is my conversation with Sovan Penn from sovanpenn.com. Hi, Sovan. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Thanks, Melvin. Great to be here.
Yeah, I feel like we've connected now. Gosh, it's been months, if not over a year, in the Facebook community, and it's wonderful to just finally meet you in person. And it's amazing how this podcasting thing has been able to connect us, even though we're in different parts of the or exact opposite sides of the country.
Oh, yeah. It's been great being a part of the Selling the Couch community each day. Look forward to the encouragement, the daily encouragement, Melvin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I wanted to have you on because I told you this, and you know, before we started the interview, it's like I can just sense your heart, and I can just sense that like you have such a kind soul, and I just wanted to have a conversation with you and talking about, you know, your own private practice journey.
Thank you.
You know, so I thought we would just start at the beginning. What motivated you to even think about private practice as a career option?
Well, becoming a counselor wasn't something that I grew up wanting to do. I think a lot of people are that way. I didn't graduate from counseling grad school until I was 35 and actually went to grad school after being pre-med in undergrad and was studying to be a hospital chaplain or an army chaplain. And then I caught the counseling bug in the coursework and taking the classes on crisis counseling and pastoral counseling, and also realized that it was a better fit for who I am and my skills. And I realized I'm not much of a preacher. I'm better working one-on-one and in small groups. And it had a heart for helping families, especially military families, and helping young couples and helping men be better dads and better husbands. So it just kind of gravitated towards that. So I finished the pastoral studies degree and then went on to do counseling. And so with just private practice was just continuing to find the venue to do the work of counseling and helping people.
You know, you said something which is so relevant when I thought key is that you used your experience in grad school to figure out what clients that you really enjoyed working with. Like, how did you know in that moment? Was it just a series of like continuing to work with those clients, or like, how did you know, like, wow, these are the folks that I want to help and that, you know, resonate with my life work?
Part of it is, I think, the heart that I had towards helping families. And then also just the experience of internships, and also just getting feedback from friends and the types of conversations and the types of people that gravitate towards you. And it just feels like a natural fit. So, but what I realize is, like, your niche and your ideal clients and, you know, the people that you do your best work with, it changes over time. And it has for me. So during internships and then early years of private practice, I focused on helping couples and families and specialized in helping couples recover from affairs and dealing with the pain of pornography and sexual addiction. And that's kind of what I specialized in for many years and still do that work. But the last few years have kind of shifted away from that, or not focusing so much on that.
That's neat, because I think a lot of times I think we make this assumption that, you know, I have to lock in to a niche and that's going to be what I do for the rest of my life. And it's just so refreshing to hear that it changes.
Yeah, there can be a lot of pressure on students as graduation nears to figure that out. Or even when we're starting out in private practice and trying to make a website and network to have our elevator speech and really be super focused on our specialty or niche. And I think for me, variety and being more of a generalist has helped me enjoy private practice and counseling more. The job that I had going through grad school, it took me 10 years to get through both degree programs. I was a sleep tech and research assistant in sleep disorders. And then when I graduated from my counseling degree, did cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia groups as a health educator. And so I specialized and had many conversations with folks about sleep. And so I didn't choose that specialty. It was just kind of my job. Yeah. And so sometimes your specialty chooses you, I think. But the thing that I really love to do and would rather talk about isn't what I started with.
So Sovan, one of the things that you talked about is as your private practice has evolved, you've evolved and your specialty has changed. So tell us a little bit more about that specialty and that niche now.
So one of the things I realized is I do my best work with actually singles, not couples. And I enjoy working with creatives, with folks who struggle with anxiety and perfectionism. And I just enjoy helping younger adults kind of discover their strengths and their passions and try to figure out what they're supposed to do to find their career or find their calling. And that's been a lot of fun to really dive into that and to realize, as much as I love working with couples and how important family and healthy marriages are to me, I do pretty good work with that. But I do my best work with individuals or even husbands or wives that are in couples counseling with another therapist and coordinating care and doing the individual work with those folks. And that has really been something that was a surprise, but it's been great the last few years.
So I have a question. So you were working with couples. How did you mentally give yourself permission to make that shift from saying, okay, like in this season of life, I worked with couples and now I think I want to work with a younger population or I want to work with just one part of that couple?
I think I realized it just by paying attention to my emotions and just practicing self-awareness, because I realized this after I'd done with clinical supervision. And so I didn't have my supervisor, my mentor, each month to debrief with when I realized this. So it was talking with my friends and colleagues, and I like to write a lot about counseling and the process of counseling, and listening to podcasts and reading books on calling and purpose and what you ultimately want to do. I realized that I was trying to force myself to be an awesome marriage counselor, but I realized I'm probably going to make my biggest impact with families or couples through writing and not the time in the office in sessions.
That's huge, right? Like just giving yourself permission to do that. And I think that's one of the neat things about private practice is that you get to create, you get to make it how you imagine it, you know?
Yeah. It's scary too, because for so many years, 7 years was my identity. And I was trying to build up to, you know, be the expert or be a good resource in that area. And then if I let that go, then, you know, it's facing the unknown. But I was much more at peace, and I knew that I'm much more energized and walk away feeling just more confident that I've provided a good service to my clients when I'm in that sweet spot.
You said you had like a lot of fears. What, like more specifically, what are some of those fears and doubts that came up when you realized you wanted to transition from just doing couples work to, you know, working with individuals?
Yeah, maybe one of the fears was referrals dropping off. So here in Portland, I try to network with different churches and pastors. I get a lot of referrals from them to work with couples. And I still love to work with couples, but part of me thought I would be misunderstood and people would think I'm giving up on this work. Because I really enjoy still working with doing premarital counseling and pre-engagement counseling and working with newly married couples. And I was worried that that would go away. And
did it? Or
no, it hasn't. And I'm happy to refer folks to my friends and colleagues. I was in private practice for 9 years before this last year, where I finally had a waiting list. So that was something new to learn how to navigate.
Well, we started talking about this in the pre-interview because I think to fully understand and appreciate having the waiting list, I think it helps to know what it was like for you in that first year. And I was wondering if you could just share that.
Oh, sure. So my first year after graduating, one of my mentors and professors asked me to join their group, and they're really successful couple doing work with sexual addiction and pornography. And the year after I graduated, I averaged one client a week. And so that was tough. I still had my day job and that paid the bills. I had just gone through 5 years of grad school or 5 years of the counseling program, and lots of moments of wondering, like, is this the right thing? Or actually, that's not true. I never questioned if it was the right thing. I just questioned my ability to make it work. And the main question was how? How is this going to work? Not is this the right thing? I knew it was the right thing.
So that's like a subtle thing. So you didn't personalize it, right? Like this isn't about your competence, but you kind of shifted it and thought more about how do I make it work as opposed to I can't make it this work.
Yeah, that's right. And back then, our grad program, it didn't really have the elective on practice building. I think they just started doing that a few years ago. So I just had to learn on my own. There was no Selling the Couch podcast back then. So I'm scrambling around trying to learn everything I can about how to start a blog and how to network and connect with people and learning from other counselors in the community. Well, how do you get referrals and get your name out there? So, and I'm still in that learning stage, I think. In Good to Great, Jim Collins, he describes the flywheel where you're learning like a company learns like the daily disciplines or rhythms, and you have to push on that flywheel for like years. And it's hard at first and you don't see much progress. But then after, and you add people to the team to push on the flywheel together with you. And then after a few years, you get momentum and it gets a lot easier. And then eventually you get to the point where the wheel practically turns itself because you've put so much time and energy into it. And so I'm feel like I'm not an expert at private practice. I'm still in that, like, I'm almost there stage.
But you know, I think that's so key, because I think that moment where you get, for any of us, whether it's in our training as clinicians or as business owners, the moment where you get to a point where you feel like you know everything, I think that's the moment where you have to be the most cautious.
Yeah. My favorite experts are people who love learning still. They're super excited about the new things that they're learning. And they just share what they've learned so far and their passion for learning.
You know, just thinking about like some of those initial conversations that you had in the meetings with colleagues and things, what would be some of those pearls of wisdom that you picked up about building a private practice from them?
I think one of the first thing is to really believe in yourself. And I learned this in the program, but that being confident in the power of therapy and counseling and the encounter, like, you don't have to have specialized training. You don't have to have your niche nailed down and super clarified when you're starting to do good work. So just, you know, get good supervision, prepare well, trust your training, your years of training and your internships, your experience, especially if you're an older grad, you know, if you've had another career, like, utilize the experiences and the training that you've had from other careers and just be confident that you have something to offer people, and listen well to what's needed in your community or in the people who are emailing you, calling you about their concerns. So be confident. And then the other thing that I wish I had taken to heart is to start to write. My supervisor encouraged me to write articles, and he kind of, I think, believed in me more than I did at the time. And boy, I wish I had been blogging and writing articles for the past 10, 12 years. I wish I had started that sooner.
Just from like a search engine perspective, or to like get your thoughts and your perspectives clarified, or kind of both?
The latter more, but certainly both. Okay. And I think that would have prepared me more for the speaking inquiries and the opportunities to do trainings and talk that now I'm more prepared to do. And it's fun. It's fun to develop training. So that's one thing I'm hoping to do, is virtual class and online trainings on things related to mental health and parenting.
That's so neat. I never thought of like blogging in that way. Like, you know, using it as a way to clarify your ideas, to lock them down for future opportunities that may come up that you may not know about, whether it's workshops or speaking or whatever it is.
Yeah, and sessions and conversations that you haven't had yet. I like to imagine the clients that I'll have next week and what I'm going to say. And I've found that as I'm dreaming and hoping to do a podcast someday, like, writing helps me prepare for speaking and hopefully podcasting eventually. The clarifying your thoughts. Like, it's so tough for private practice here in Portland because there's so many grad programs and so many counseling graduates each year. So clarifying who you are, the process of writing, and clarifying the solutions that you offer and the process and the unique way that you do counseling, writing definitely helps distinguish you, not in a competitive way, but just something that really you get really integrated so that you're able to communicate who you are and your unique way of working with clients or potential clients.
Yeah, I like that. I think just putting your unique voice and unique perspective out into the world.
Yeah, that's the word, voice. Yeah, you find your voice through writing, or at least I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you ready for the hot couch round?
Yes.
Okay, let's do this. What's a daily habit that you believe contributes to your success?
Daily reading or listening, and then writing a response, even if it's a short Facebook response to something I'm learning.
I'm just going to like go off the cuff here, but do you have like a certain time of the day you do that, or is it kind of just being mindful to do it at some point during the day?
Usually in the commute. Usually listen to a podcast or read before I leave the house. And so it kind of percolates all morning. And then I usually write something at noon at lunch break.
What's an online resource that's been invaluable on your private practice journey?
Can I share two?
Of course.
Michael Hyatt, Bob.com blog has been really helpful. His book Platform, really read that a few years ago, and it kind of spurred me on to not just view private practice as a way of getting clients and business, but it's to think bigger picture of developing a platform and kind of think of the variety of ways that we can help people and interact with people. And then the other one would be Jeff Goins's Portfolio Life podcast. I really enjoy that podcast. He emphasizes that entrepreneurs can enjoy different and do well in different areas. And that has helped me be more creative, and it encourages me with the different things that I'm interested in doing.
Yeah, that's really neat. I didn't realize Jeff Goins had a podcast. I'll have to check it out. What is your favorite business-related book?
I would say, lately, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. It's an older book, but I just reread it for a coaching class on leading and managing, and it just reemphasized the importance of trust and healthy communication. But on the whole, anything by John Maxwell is my favorite business resource, because I think leadership and self-leadership, growing as a leader, is vital to whatever business endeavor, because business is a reflection of how we want to live. It's a piece of our life, and I find him very helpful.
What's one tip that you would give to someone who's thinking about starting a private practice?
Besides joining Sal on the Couch, I think get connected in community, find good mentors and role models, and take action. Be brave. Like, I studied for years. I was a fan of authors. I was a fan of counselors in the community and nationally that were doing business well. But I didn't see myself as a peer or someone who could do that.
There was a disconnect, right?
Yeah. And it wasn't really perfectionism. It was just insecurity that I could make it work. Maybe it was that rough first year of averaging one client a year. I had to battle through that and just go for it. Even though I didn't know what the outcome would be, but as you move, then you adjust, then you figure out whether it's working or not, or you learn how to make it better. So you just learn the basics of private practice building and pick any plan, or not any plan, pick something to start that feels authentic to you, and then just pursue it.
Imagine that you were starting your private practice journey all over again. You have $500 in your laptop. What's that first step that you would take toward building your practice?
I would invest in getting your website up and learning, buying a whole bunch of books, and get a coach or do a workshop or a conference on private practice building, so you learn those basics.
Right. So you're not having to make the same mistakes others have made.
Right. I think I mentioned this earlier, investing in a day training and investing in coaching can save you years of heartache, years of going down the wrong direction.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because I think this has come up recently in the community. It's, you know, I think for me, I used to think a lot about, like, when I would invest money in something or my time in courses and things, I would just often think like, oh no, they're trying to take my money. But I think when I started shifting my mindset and thinking I'm investing in myself, and if this time and money that I invest now, I always think in terms of rate of return, but if it saves me a lot of heartache and pain in the long run, then it's worth it.
Oh yeah.
So Vaughn, what are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Well, they can connect with me on Facebook. We're at a New Day Counseling Center. And my website, savanpenn.com.
Awesome. I will be sure to link to them in the show notes. So Vaughn, thank you so much for doing this. And it's been awesome and such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Melvin. It's been great to finally talk with you.
Likewise. Take care.
Hey there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Savanpenn. You know, one of the neatest things in speaking with Sivan is we had actually connected through the Selling the Couch community. And there was just something about Sivan. Every time he posted, you could tell that he just genuinely wanted to help our field. And I'm just so glad that Sivan was able to come on the podcast and to be able to just share a lot of the wisdom that he's learned along the way. Sivan mentioned a number of resources, and you can find those at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 83. And you can find more information about Sivan and his practice at sivanpen.com. Have a great rest of your week, and thank you again for taking the time to listen. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.